Alrighty, good morning. Nice early weekly update today. We are at 6 a.m. local here on the Gold Coast. Still dark. The sun will rise from somewhere out there in just a moment. Now, this is what I should have done. I should turn off all my notifications and things so I can give you my full attention. I feel like today's got a lot of substance. Now, we'll see who turns up to a slightly different hour, but a lot of stuff around this outer box kind of, I was going to say cluster something. You know what I mean? It's a mess. So, G'day, Wayne. Thank you for joining. Now, before I start that, last week I had mentioned that I was 3D printing a bunch of stuff for one of the NDC talks, which is going to be kind of cool. Nick007 and Stefan. G'day, Stefan. Thanks for joining, mate. Now there's two NDC talks. Why am I doing this? Doing it for the love. Two NDC talks. The one I've been talking about. We'll do it the other way around. Keynote, important talk because everyone's there. It's a big event. It's the favorite one. It is an all new keynote. I'm digging up projects I built in the 90s. That's part of the keynote. This has been a trip down memory lane, I'll tell you. Wondering if I still had the code and deeply secreted away in an archive somewhere, I found the code. It was efficient, I'll give you that much. It was light, it was very light. The presence of a MIDI file in there brought a smile to my face. Anyway, so that'll be the keynote. Now, the other part of it was the 3D printing talk with Elle, my 11-year-old daughter, which I think I mentioned last week. I'm probably taking more serious than I've ever taken any talk before, certainly putting more hours into it, because I'm spending my life going between the old 3D printer and the new 3D printer printing stuff. Now, I'll give you an example of two different things we've printed. Let's face it, me, doing the work which she's been at school. Two of the things I've printed, which are existing models, you can get them from printables.com, which is Prusa's online repository of printable things. And they're just cool. And I think I mentioned last week, but one of the things that is sort of the guiding principle for what we talk about at this event is what are the things where we've seen them and we've gone, that's really cool. I really like that. I didn't know you could do that with a printer. Number one is a counting machine. It does exactly what it sounds like it does. It counts. Now, this is all 3D printed. And every part in here, almost every part, I didn't print the magnets. There are magnets in here. I didn't print the magnets or the rubber band, which is just off the side. But this is 3D printed. There's probably, let's call it 30, 40 different parts in here. Some of them are printed with a multi-material unit too. So if you look at the numbers, this is one print, but it uses both a white filament and an orange filament. And it uses the multi-material unit to keep switching filaments. And I think from memory, it did it 100 times in order to print this, because it prints part of the layer in white, and then it prints a little part of the layer in orange. And then it switches back to the white, and then it goes up a layer, so on and so forth. What it eventually does is this. So you push the little lever, and see the number goes around? And it keeps going round and round and round, which is really cool. And then you get to the zeros, and it changes, or you know, the tens column changes. And it just keeps going and going and going. It's got a little collar here that you can slide. This is all serious business, of course, as her slides. And it will now go back the other way. How cool is that? And then it's got a little lever here, which releases so that all the dials can then reset. And it sounds good. It's a reassuring 1930s accounting office sort of sound. Part of the reason it sounds good is it's got every one of these wheels has got 10 magnets in it. So one magnet behind each wheel. And then down the sides here, there's these three bars that have also got magnets in them. Four magnets each. So what are you up to now? There's 40 magnets, 52 magnets, and then there's another three magnets here, 55 magnets in total. And the magnets just sort of snap into place. So as you roll the wheel, it always ends up perfectly on the number. And it sounds great because these are all the magnets kind of flopping around in their little containers. Say containers, we press two bits together. So this is really, really cool. You know, things like this, these are screws, right? Like 3D printed screws. This serves no practical purpose, but it is cool, super cool. I'll show you the next thing in a moment. Wayne says, have Bamboo not sent you a printer yet? Now, without getting into all the controversies, So Prusa, started by Joseph Prusa just over a decade ago, I believe now, from Prague. They have enormously good community support. So 3 years ago when I started looking for printers, I'd visited a mate of mine. It was still COVID time. We were locked down. I was like, that looks really cool. Tell me what to buy. What is this? And he's a mate who's a very, very smart guy, but he's not in our circles. So, you know, maybe it's like smart person version of non-geek 3D printers. And he's, oh, this is a Prusa. He told me all about it. And I get online and I ask people, it's like, you know, look at 3D printers. What do you reckon? And Prusa was just like way, way, way above in front of everyone else. And a large part of it was really, really good community support, really good community engagement. It's our kind of people. If you're living in a world where we're sharing code and ideas and writing stuff and speaking your mind, that's the sort of people that Prusa was. So I bought the gear, started tweeting a lot about it, connected with Joseph, who's the guy that started the company, spent some time with him in Prague in September. So he went and visited and got a great tour of the Prusa factory, spent some social time with him. Really, really nice guy. And we have a connection. We being both Charlotte and I and Joseph as well. Now, Bamboo is a Chinese company. They seem to be making very, very good turnkey printers from what I've read. Never used them. There does seem to be some contention around, what's the right word to use here? Licensing innovation. I know from China, who'd have thought it? So I have seen on the public timeline and elsewhere some things that maybe position them as not quite as much our people. Now, that said, I'm sure they actually create really good printers, and it's a little bit like the whole Tesla situation. You can't just have one manufacturer out there dominating everything. We need competition to keep it all good for all of us. So that's the only thing with Bamboo. Wayne says, I sold my other printers after getting a Bamboo. I will say the Mark IV, which we've just bought, is significantly better than the Mark III in terms of speed, reliability, quality. It's kind of fascinating to run them next to each other and see just how different a bunch of things are. Even stuff like I'm getting so much stringing on the Mark III at the moment with exactly the same filament in the same temperature and the same climate. Even changing around nozzles, I'm not sure. Maybe there's, I don't know, some retraction setting or something like that. Niall's here. G'day, Niall. Niall Merrigan. I am easily amused. Hang around you. I'm always amused. What are we up to here? Stephen wants a binary counter. Sure, we can work backwards to that. Now, while we're here looking at printable parts, so here's the other thing we've done this week, and this looks really, really cool. This is a Cryptex. So think about Da Vinci Code style stuff. And again, all 3D printed, all moving parts. So you've got these little collars here. And somewhere, if you get the code right, can't show you the code because it is a password. And these are going to be doing the rounds at our talk in NDC in Oslo. And Niall, I assume you're going to be there, Niall. I might be asking for your support of being the, let's call you the 3D printing leprechaun to hand these out to some people. Sorry, mate. So once you get the code right, the thing comes apart and then you get the secret goodies inside. There's a little canister in there. But I love the way it's printed. A lot of multi-material unit on this. All of them, the letters here are multi-material unit. These collars with the gold inlay are multi-material unit, and everything else like these gold rings are just gold rings that you then assemble the whole thing. So this is mostly 3D printed, but there are some screws, and they're little like M310 screws that just, you know, go into the filament. They've got existing screw holes. Is that the right word? Screw holes in them, so you can put the whole thing together afterwards, which is great. It's just it's fascinating when you pick this up and go, how cool is that? We made that on a printer. What else happening here? Of substance, now. Christian says, make it wider, put in some electronics and have it count the total breaches and have I been pwned? I'm going to need a bigger counter. All right, so let me get onto it. Talking about breaches. Out of box. Oh, boy. Now, there's a name that I had not heard before, but before I explain what Out of Box is and what they've done and why my entire day went in front of media yesterday, we're going to talk about clubs in Australia and in New South Wales in particular. Now, someone in the lengthy thread I had going yesterday asked a very good question. What is a club? So, in Australia, we have this concept of a club. And for the most part, I think we would just say club without thinking too much about what the definition is. It's somewhere that normally serves alcohol, but not everywhere that serves alcohol is a club. And I think the defining characteristic, and inevitably there's a law somewhere because there are regulations around how clubs operate, is that they have gambling. Now, gambling in clubs here is what we refer to as poker machines, which has got nothing to do with poker as a card game. You might call them slot machines. If you've ever been to Vegas, they're the things that confront you as soon as you walk off the aeroplane and do not leave you until you get back on the plane. The one-armed bandits, they used to call them, where people are sitting there just pumping money into this thing, pushing buttons, hoping to win something. You don't. Or if you do, it's a loan. You give it back. They always give it back. I have a vehement, vehement dislike, really, of most gambling. I like the saying that gambling is a tax on people who can't do maths. Right? Like, casinos and things are not a charity. They're there because they've done the maths much better than you or I ever could, and they know that they will make money out of it. Part of the issue here, and this will tie into the data breach, is that this is massively addictive. And part of the issue also is that these clubs, and I'll give you a good example. We've got a yacht club down here. Now, that sounds fancier than what it is. There are some yachts. There's some nice yachts. But it's on the water. You go in there. You can have a nice lunch. You're sitting on the water. They've got poker machines there, pokies. And this is part of the way they fund their facilities because they get a share of the profits. And it's kind of a little bit shittier. It's like, all right, so we need our patrons to come in here and lose money and in some cases have a real impact on people's lives and families and everything else in order to fund what we do. Anyway, so there's gambling there. Now, as soon as you have gambling, you have a lot of regulations around things like money laundering, because gambling is apparently, I have heard, a great way to launder money. You know, like you walk into a casino with like a bag full of ill-gotten gains, you cash it in for chips, you go and you play the pokies or the blackjack or whatever, maybe you donate 20% of them to the casino, you walk out, you cash them in, I made all this money gambling, legitimately. So, money laundering. So that now is a heavily regulated industry because stuff like this has got to be kept tabs on. Also, because gambling is a massive problem for many people, people need to be able to do things like self opt out and say, look, I keep going on benders. I can't help myself. Please ban me from these venues. So they're heavily regulated. Now, the weird thing about clubs here in Australia is you walk into a club and you got to sign in. So it's not like you can go to any pub here and walk in and go, oh, I'll have a beer, mate, and you're fine. You go into a club and you need to identify yourself, which usually means showing your driver's license. Now, there's some weird stuff around. Depending on how close you are from the venue, you have to register to become a member versus being a visitor. I don't completely understand. I just go there for beer. So that's it. But you regularly have to show your driver's license, your identification. Now, New South Wales is our most populous state, not our physically largest state. Our most populous state starts about 30 kilometres that way. It includes Sydney. You may have heard of it. Now, in New South Wales, there's a bunch of clubs that have this check-in facility made by a company called Outer Box, a name that I did not even know about until the last 36 hours. Now, Outer Box creates a check-in facility. I'm going to get some of the details up here on the screen here. All right, Outer Box. And you know what I'll do so we can all follow along here? Let me put this in the chat. Noel says, the club does serve really nice food, though. Not the yacht club. I've not been happy with the yacht club lately, mate. That's another story. Anyway, Triagem. So this company called Outer Box has Triagem facial recognition kiosk, Triagem self-service registration kiosk, Triagem QR registration and sign-in. Now, imagine, I'll actually avoid sharing this particular website. Let me just get the details here. And what I want to do is find, I'm just going to say that this is the biggest clusterfuck. Wait until you see how bad this is. Let me just see if I can copy this image and drop it in the chat. Yep, okay. This URL won't give away anything I don't want to give away. Okay, so here is an image in the chat of a facial recognition check-in device. Now, this one says, welcome to the tradies. The tradies in this case would be a club. Now, my understanding, and again, I'm just learning on the job here, the last 36 hours, is that you walk up to this machine, you'll see it has a camera on it. It can recognize your face because you have been there before and registered and shown your driver's license and provided a signature. It can recognize your face and it can say, g'day, try it. Welcome back to the club. And then you get entry. So this is the check-in procedure. So far, so good. Night before last, so at 6:15 on Friday morning now, Wednesday night, I was up unusually late because I played tennis late, and I'm laying in bed reading my Twitters, which you're not meant to do, but anyway, reading my Twitters, and I noticed this thread by Amber Wolf, who's a journalist here in Australia, and she's looped me into something because there's a website called Have I Been Outerboxed? And I was like, oh, that's interesting, and it appears to be a search service. And I tweet it because I'm half asleep by then anyway. And I'm like, oh, you know, imitation is the greatest form of flattery sort of thing. It's like, have I been pwned? But have I been out of box? Okay, another thing in data breach. I get up yesterday morning and I realize what a mess this is. So here's what's happened. Out of box is a company based, I believe, in Sydney. Details are a bit sketchy at the moment for reasons you'll understand in a moment. Unless I believe in Sydney. I'm not sure because I found some references to a place in Melbourne as well. So apologies to Outerbox if wrong here. So they've been developing these systems. Now, allegedly, the development has been offshored to developers in the Philippines, which is fine. We do a lot of this these days. Used to do a lot of it at Pfizer. That wasn't so fine. Different story. Allegedly, to developers in the Philippines who claim that they had not been paid for the last 18 months. And as retribution for not having been paid, and now the work having been offshored to Vietnam, they decided to create a search website with everyone's personal data. As if somehow that would be a good way to get paid. Now, it's just the level, and it gets worse and worse and worse. If you haven't been reading my Twitter thread, you should be chewing all the popcorn by now just listening to this. I'm just going to read parts of what they've written on the website here. Outerbox contracted an offshore team of developers from the Philippines to build their software systems. While this outsourcing strategy is common in the industry, what followed was far from standard practice. The developers were granted unrestricted access to the back-end systems of gaming venues, including access to raw data containing facial recognition biometrics, driver's license scans, club membership details, and more. The developers were directed to back up all the data off-site, possibly against the knowledge of the operating venue. Shockingly, Outerbox provided little to no oversight, allowing these developers free rein over sensitive consumer information. What makes Outerbox's behavior even more egregious is their abrupt decision to sever ties with the offshore team without fulfilling their contractual obligations. Despite the developers' year and a half of work, Outerbox callously refused to compensate them, leaving a trail of unpaid invoices and shattered trust in their wake. This is the claim of the developers. Now, they've then gone on and they've got photos of all the leadership here of Outerbox. Apparently, they've got a new team in Vietnam. They've also gone through and taken, is this the CEO? It's Glenn James, CEO, head honcho, and they've got his photo that's been taken by one of these devices. They've got his driver's license where they've obfuscated all of the sensitive stuff. They've got his signature, and they've just put all of this on a public search website. Now, again, this is their claim, and this just blew up, and this took us through to like yesterday morning, and the status as of yesterday morning was, all right, this thing's now searchable. All these people were like, yeah, that is my data. But when it's searchable, if I give it a bit of John Smith, just over 1 million records, okay, on the front page, and there's a little bit, have I been punished, big search box. On the front page, it says, What to do if your ID is in this database. Unfortunately, if you see your name here, then you have been out-of-boxed. So out-of-boxed is the term that they have chosen. You are at risk of having your identity stolen and becoming a victim of fraud and scams. That's in red. Now, just take a step back for a moment. Why are you at risk of fraud and scams? Because the developers have taken the data that they're entrusted to manage and they've run off with it and they've put it on a search site. That's why you are not at risk because of out of box. You're at risk because of the developers who took the data. Anyway, you do a John Smith search and it comes back and it says, what's the club where John Smith signed? Oh, there's a lot of John Smiths. There's an address that just has a suburb, the state and the postcode, and there's a birthday that just has the year. Everything else is redacted. So obviously they have made some attempt at redacting pieces of information. You know what I haven't done? I haven't searched my own name. Let's see. Why didn't I search my own name? Probably because I don't gamble, because I can do maths. It's not loading. I'm actually surprised this thing is still up. Or have they? Are they not sufficiently handling their 404s? Do they 404? I know we're getting into the technical weeds here, but I am kind of fascinated. Let's come back to 200. Let's see. That's not me, and that's not me. No, they are both 1988 birth dates, so they are not. I'm older than that. All right, so I get up yesterday morning and then spend the rest of the day doing media because suddenly this is a massive, massive story in Australia. Even though there's only a million users, the issue of driver's licenses is one of the problems. The other issue, and this is the one that I thought would probably make more headlines than what it has, but it's still got probably undue attention, is the bit about facial recognition, which brings us into the whole area of biometric data and the protections of biometric data and then what you can do when you have biometric data. Now, the first problem here is I have not seen anywhere an explanation of what the biometric data is. Are they referring to photos? Is it literally just photos? Because I'm not sure that we'd chuck that in the category of biometric data. Also, these terminals appear to do facial recognition purely by camera and matching with photos, which is basic facial recognition. It is not like face authentication to my iPhone, which also has an infrared camera and a dot sensor and all of these other really, really funky things, attention awareness. It's not by any stretch of the imagination a situation where this data breach has data which would allow you to log into people's phones or do other forms of authentication. It, as best as I can tell, is just face matching. It's just photos. So I feel like we could just park the biometric thing altogether. The thing that's going to be more interesting is the driver's licenses. Now, we had a big incident when Niall was out here for my wedding, actually, September before last, where Optus, our second largest telco, had about 11 million people in a data breach that included driver's licenses. And next minute, everyone has to go away and replace their driver's licenses because that is a form of identity verification. These clubs are collecting, by law, driver's licenses, because if you need to go in and gamble, then you need to prove your identity because of the money laundering and so on and so forth. So the leaking of the driver's licenses is the thing that seems to be the real problem here. Now, many other things have happened since, and I'm going to go to the thread here I have on Twitter because I find this sort of keeps us pretty much up to date. And I keep adding to this as we go. Driver's licenses, I mentioned, the thing that's kind of fascinating is the claim that the devs make about the backup the data to the cloud. And we've got a combination of problems here where you've got claims from disgruntled people. We'll come back to them. You've got the organization that's really clamped down and has now said there was unauthorized access. And what's kind of funny about this is, it's not funny, but it's an amusing kind of thing. Out-of-Box have made a statement where they've said, look, there was unauthorized access. Let's actually find their website. I think it's like out-of-box.io because Indian Ocean is all the rage now. Out-of-Box. Out-of-Box.io. Press release. So this is the only thing that they've said so far. Out-of-Box has become aware of a potential breach a bit more than potential. Potential breach of data by an unauthorized third party. Remember that term, unauthorized. From a sign-in system used by our clients. We're working as a priority to determine the facts around this incident, have notified the relevant authorities, and are investigating in cooperation with law enforcement. We are restricted by how much information we are able to provide at this stage. Given it is currently under active police investigation, we will provide further details as soon as we're able to. We understand this news may cause concern to our staff, clients, and their customers, and we thank them for their support and patience as we work to resolve this issue as swiftly as possible. So, unauthorized access. Now, the folks that have stood up this out-of-box search site have pushed back on that. They've said out-of-box claimed in their press release that there was potential unauthorized access by a third party. However, access to the data was authorized by senior executives from out-of-box who gave clear instruction to the developers in the Philippines to schedule regular backups onto external clouds, hence access was fully authorized. I feel like what they're missing here is that there is a difference between whilst you are employed by us, you are authorized to perform backup tasks with the data and let's just take all the data and put it on a server. You're not authorized to do that. So I'm agreeing without not knowing how legitimate these claims we're not getting paid are. I'm definitely agreeing with Outerbox that there was some very, very unauthorized access here. So they're clearly pushing back on this, the alleged devs. Now, going back through the thread here, okay, all the facial recognition stuff is really just photos. The offshore thing, and as this story unfolds, we'll learn more about the offshore thing. I've seen people, even in my own timeline, saying, this is why you don't offshore. This is why data has to stay onshore. And I'm like, well, okay. So we can have data in the Sydney AWS cloud, but you can't have data in the Manila AWS cloud. Is that what you're saying? Yeah, because it's safe. Who has access to the data? Well, the developers. Where are the developers? Philippines. So you realize if you're there in like two RDP terminals and like one is in the Philippines and one is in Sydney, they look exactly the same and you have exactly the same level of access. So the question of data sovereignty is not just where the data sits, but who has access. So are we now saying, don't give offshore people access to data? Now, to be clear, we do have data sovereignty laws around some classes of data, health data, for example. And every country in the world has some form of data sovereignty laws about where data can sit, depending on the class. I highly doubt we have any laws that would restrict this class of data from sitting in servers outside of Australia. If someone's like a data privacy lawyer or something, let me know if I'm wrong. I may be, but I don't think I am. Right, so do you have Filipino devs with access to data? Because it doesn't matter where the data sits if the people themselves are offshore. What if they're onshore? If they're in Australia, are we suddenly okay with this? If we have developers in Australia with access to this data, are we okay with that? Well, if they do the same thing, it's the same end result, isn't it? And someone said, yeah, but it's easier to pursue them legally. We'll see what's happened with this in just a moment, but that does not seem to have made any difference in this case. I worry as well. And again, in my role at Pfizer, one of my responsibilities was offshoring a lot of what we did to China, Philippines, and India. And I had all sorts of problems with that for many, many different reasons. But I don't think the concern, and we were building everything from like adverse event reporting systems to clinical trial systems, like really, really sensitive stuff. Number one, I didn't really have concerns about, let's be honest, the nationality or the ethnicity of the people doing the work. And this is what worries me about this discussion. I think it's very, very easy to become quickly xenophobic around, I'm concerned because they're not Aussies. That really worries me. That feels very uncomfortable. I do think there's one massive, massive point here, which is not clear in any of this discussion because we're either getting one side of the story being the Filipino devs or no side of the story, which is out of box. There's a massive difference between development and access to production data. There should be a massive difference between building software and accessing all the data that the software manages. I'm not sure how many controls there actually were to separate those two things because we keep seeing the word Filipino developers asked to back up offshore. Well, we haven't seen it say asked to back up offshore. We've seen back up to the cloud. Whose cloud? Where is the cloud? Not clear. Now, mind you, it may be that this was very much some sort of effectively an MSP. And that MSP provided services that included software development and data management. This is an entirely feasible outcome. Now, what sort of segregation of duties and everything they had there, who knows? That hasn't yet become quite clear in this. Now, let me pause here just for a second because I'm going to get to the more interesting bit that happened last night after a look at the comments here. Igor says, so have I been out of box is by the developer company. That explains the pointed language. Yes. Now, I just picked up on something very, very minor here, but I'm kind of curious because, and as part of my time at Pfizer offshoring to the Philippines, I spent a bunch of time in the Philippines too, and know a bunch of Filipino people, and I feel like I got a little bit of a sense of the culture. For those of you who have not been to the Philippines, they got a lot of Spanish and US influence, largely through colonialization and all sorts of other interesting historical things. They have English that is very, very closely aligned to American English. And when you read through this website, the English is spot on and there are Zs in the word. As soon as we see Zs, because I saw a Z here, if you're American, you may recognize this letter as a Z, unauthorized. Lots of Zs in here, which, okay, so it's a minor thing, but it does feel like this was consistent with the claim that it was written by Filipinos, potentially. Anyway, minor data point. But yes, very pointed language. James says, do I have to show ID to buy a painting? A lot of money laundering there. Not being a money launderer myself, honestly, I would imagine that it is harder to launder money through art than what it is through a casino, largely because anyone can walk into a casino. I just realized, I don't think you actually, do you have to show ID going into a casino? It has been so long since I've walked into a casino, because I can do math. My last recollection of being, it was many, many, many years ago. And we do have a casino here on the Gold Coast too. Good question. Maybe you have to when you cash in or cash out, or maybe for significant sums or something. Regardless, I imagine it is much easier to walk in with cash and convert that into chips and then convert chips back into cash than what it is to be buying fine art from a shady underworld dealer. Nick Dubois Seven says, I completely agree with Troy. I worked for a certain telco that starts with T. Well, it's obviously T for telco. Who else could it be? Right, so where this now gets interesting, more interesting, is seeing the disclosure notices. So we've got a club here called West Tradies, which may be the tradies that was in that little image that I shared in the chat before. And they've sent a disclosure out yesterday morning to their members with multiple interesting things. So first of all, disclosures are going to need to come from the clubs themselves, because the clubs are the entities that are collecting the data. Out-of-box isn't going to turn around and email. And look, we've seen this so many times before as well. We've seen so many times where there will be a software product or service with a vulnerability, and it's the organizations that use that and had their customer data exposed that need to do the notifications. So we're seeing that. In this particular disclosure, they didn't name out-of-box. Now, of course, I find the language weird because it could have been a lot more transparent. Prior to 2023, the club engaged an external IT provider. And that's it, they don't say out-of-box. So haven't named them here at all. So that was kind of interesting. They then say that they didn't know out-of-box made the data accessible to the Filipino devs. Now, they didn't use that term exactly. Where is it? How'd this breach occur? Let me reiterate that prior to 29 April 2024, the club was unaware that any data held by the club had been disclosed to any third parties or that had been disclosed overseas. So what they seem to be saying here is they didn't know that out-of-box was A, giving the data to anyone else to manage, or B, taken offshore. Now, you can imagine if this statement is true, there's like a whodunit kind of novel, isn't it? There's all these different parties all with their own opinions here. But if these statements are true, that is a massive, massive problem, because particularly these days, we've got so many controls around who are processors and sub-processors and who's going to be responsible for your data and who has this and who has that. So according to them, they didn't know, which is a problem. Now, the other thing here is there's a bit here about cyber extortion. And this is where it gets really, really interesting. On the evening of 29 April 2024, we're formally notified by the external provider that it had been the target of a, quote, cyber extortion campaign, and that an overseas third party is threatening to release personal information unless their demands are complied with. Now, you feel like you're only getting part of the story here, because the Filipino devs, based on their website, have said, we didn't get paid, we're upset we haven't got paid. You've then got out-of-box through West Tradies in a disclosure notice saying we're being extorted for money. It's a contract dispute. Let's agree on that. It's a contract dispute, because clearly the folks who leaked the data had access to the data. We know that because they leaked it. And clearly there is a dispute around money and some threats have been made. So we're learning more and more as the whole thing unravels. Now, the stuff the press picks up on. There's a headline here from ABC News, one of our state-funded news outlets. Premier Chris Minns, who's Premier of New South Wales, and Police Minister Yasmin Catley named impossible data breach in licensed venues across New South Wales. Now, you're not going to believe this, but it is possible that a politician and a policewoman went to a club. And this is in the headlines. Why? Yeah, you know why they went to the pub? Because they're people. Like, that's it. And they wanted a beer. Hopefully they're smart enough not to be gambling. Now, not all clubs apparently have been notified about this as well. Impacted clubs. I said Amber Wolf before. Asher Wolf. So Asher Wolf has shared a screen grab here from the Bowling Club of Bulladilla, which is on the northern end of Sydney. Headline is data breach, all capitals, stars either side. The Bulladilla Bowling Club has only just been made aware that we have been named in a data breach involving Outerbox. At least I named them. Outerbox is the company we previously used for our... This is interesting. Previously used. Did they or the Filipino devs retain data beyond its useful purpose or beyond its punitive... You know what I mean. Did they have it for too long? Latitude Financial style. For those of you from overseas, Latitude Financial was a data breach that happened earlier last year from a financial company that included me, and I got a letter in the post to my parents' place because in the 90s I had had a loan that I can't remember what it was for, and I'm in a data breach. Outerbox is the company we previously used for electronic signing systems. However, we cancelled our association with Outerbox several months ago. We do not yet know the extent or impacts of the breach. We're working with our IT support and also Clubs New South Wales to learn more. We are hoping that the impact on our club will be minimal or zero, given that we no longer deal with Outerbox. However, if we discover that the data breach has had any effect on our club or our members, we will advise further. So they don't know. And part of the problem here now is that without statements from Outerbox, you don't know whether it's just the current customers or the previous customers or if there's anything else that's impacted by it. I mean, one of the things that the devs have published here, redacted, to this data breach website is a screenshot of an Excel spreadsheet with passwords, because apparently that's where they store their passwords. It's kind of wild, actually. So there's a heading here. The devs have said, Outerbox's data security procedures are severely lacking. Outerbox stored sensitive information like passwords in an unsecured spreadsheet, which was accessible by all employees and contractors. Well, that's a bit weird. Is that sentence wrong? Outerbox stored sensitive information like passwords in an unsecured spreadsheet, which was accessible by all employees and contractors, is a clear example of this. You're missing a word, guys. Missing a word. Additionally, exporting entire club membership databases, including slot machine data, without proper consent or knowledge of the clubs, is a serious breach of trust and potential regulatory compliance. This is how Outerbox handled each venue's sensitive data. What I find fascinating is on the website where they've published a million plus records of personal data that you can search, they are trying to talk about the proper management of data and maintaining privacy. Is it just me? Now, here's where it gets even messier. Keeps going, this thing. Someone tweeted, and I've since deleted the tweet for reasons you'll understand tomorrow. Someone tweeted a screen cap of the SMS that they received from that West Tradies Club from whom I posted the data breach disclosure notice earlier on. Now, whenever I share anything online that I get sent data breach notifications all the time, whenever I share any of this, I go through and I read every word to make sure that their name or their address or some other identifier about them is not in there, not just for their privacy, but so that should that organization get pissed that someone's sharing disclosure notices, they can't type back to the individual. This person tweeted a screen cap of an SMS. And the SMS was something to the effect of, you know, data breach, here's the URL. And it was the fishiest looking URL you can ever imagine. It was fishy, 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 top to bottom. Fishy domain, fishy path. The path had, I think, like half a dozen letters and numbers. It looked like a unique ID. But when I went there and I read the contents of it, it was exactly like the other message that I'd sent earlier on. There was nothing in there that identified the person. So I quote tweeted their tweet and added it to my thread. So again, this person tweeted a screen cap of the SMS with the URL themselves. So someone then got, as if that wasn't bad enough, right? The fishy looking domain. Someone then got in touch with me and said, I've tried to DM the guy, but his DMs are closed to people he doesn't follow. Have a look at the URL. So the shortened URL then resolved to a full URL that had the guy's name and phone number in the address in order to load a PDF that had no personal information on it whatsoever. So this guy had inadvertently self-doxed himself, and it was an account which wasn't clearly identifiable by name as well, because for some reason the club thought that it was a good idea. I don't know. It's a gift that keeps on giving. It's so stupid. Let me look at the comments, James. I haven't been to a casino in 20 years and I've never gambled in one. I can also do maths. I do know after you win a certain amount, they make you fill out an IRS form in the US before cashing in. Well, I've never won I have won certain amounts, but I think they've usually been like one or two digits and that's it. James, side note. I can hear the unencrypted casino communications with the radio I bought on Amazon for about $80. I have heard them moving money and other stuff. Awesome. Oh, man. No, I had to get a glass of wine after hearing all that. We're not done. Keep the wine. I have to be done soon because I've got to go and do a thing. The last thing that has come out of this, which was the last thing added last night, is that there has been an arrest in Sydney. Now, this is interesting. Headline here, breaking, Clubs New South Wales, out-of-box data breach, not a hack, New South Wales police make arrest. Now, I agree, it is not what we'd classify as a hack. It is a data breach because there is data in unauthorized hands, but there is no security vulnerability, for example, that has been exploited in order to get this data. Now, let's get to the interesting bit here. Cybercrime squad detectives work closely with federal and state agencies to contain the breach. The website's still up, guys. And commence an investigation under Strike Force Division following extensive inquiries about 4:20 p.m. today, which is yesterday. So this is about 14 hours ago. Strike Force detectives executed a search warrant in Fairfield West, which is in the western side of Sydney. At the address, police arrested a 46-year-old man. He'll be taken to Fairfield Police Station where he's expected to be charged with blackmail. So, blackmail is the charge, which is interesting, because if you look at it through that lens, now whether or not there's a contract dispute, it reads like they have said, if you don't give us money, we will do this thing, which is, is blackmail. I note also, and this is in part of my thread, the domain that's being used for search website was registered about, I think it's about 6 days ago now, 6.5 days, probably at this moment. So, my reading of the chronology of this is that people who had privileged access, who might be Filipino developers, but based on his arrest, also seem to have someone onshore here in Australia. So it's just note that onshore point for everyone going, this is why you're done offshore to the Philippines. Oh, yeah. How'd it work out for old mate in Fairfield West? So reading of this is that obviously there's been a dispute. If we take the year and a half timeline that there's been a relationship for some period of time, some sort of contractual dispute, it reads like there is probably someone onshore here who is responsible for managing the folks who are offshore. This is my best guess based on the data. The claim has been made that we want some money. The threat has then been made that if you don't give us the money, we're going to dump the data. Clearly, Outerbox managed to have some earlier communication with some of the clubs about this threat so that people had some advance warning. The threat was carried out. The data was dumped publicly. It is hard to imagine an outcome where not just the bloke who's already been arrested, but if there are folks in the Philippines who are responsible for this, will not face some sort of law enforcement retribution. We're good friends with the Philippines. They are well and truly within the scope of aid and assistance from local law enforcement. So I can't imagine this working out at all well for the folks involved in standing this up. It is stupid from top to bottom to do this. And I'm a little bit pissed that they've gone and used a rip-off name of Have I Been Pwned to do something dodgy AF, but it's also not the first time people have used the name of my project to do weird stuff. Okay. What's next? Axe says, you can't make this up. I know, and I bet you we're going to see a lot more weird stuff yet too. There will be. Sam, how's the CoinHive numbers doing? Any update on how you're planning to progress it? I haven't looked. I need to give it some attention. I don't know. Now, I've got about 10 minutes and then I do have to run. So I want to talk about Qantas for a bit as well, because Qantas was another really uncomfortable thing. Everybody knows Qantas. What you may not know if you're not from this part of the world is Qantas has really been in the firing line recently. It's everything from loads of cancelled flights through to having sold tickets for flights which they were never intended to run, and they've had a lot of legal retribution from that. They've for so long been like the shining beacon of safety and all these other wonderful things, and they've really suffered. CEO and some of the board members got the boot. I think it was just early this year, late last year. New CEO come in, yeah, we're going to shake stuff up, we're going to do everything awesome. And then they've had this issue where people have been logging onto the Qantas app, looking at flights, and seeing other people's boarding passes. Now, this is really, really bad. I've got another thread going on this. So there's an example here, someone on Twitter, El Yorbo. Hey Qantas, I'm pretty sure whatever app issue this warning is about is not entirely resolved, because every time I refresh, I get someone else's name, points balance, and status. And he's got four screen caps in here. It's like, hi Cheryl, 92,000 points. Hi Mitchell, 563,000 points. Hi Carolyn, 5,000 points. And the app keeps pulling back other people's data. Now, this is a data breach because you have given data to unauthorized parties. Data breach. It doesn't seem to be malicious. It seems to be someone has screwed up somewhere in the code. And as I said, somewhere in the tweet thread, it feels like someone screwed up their caching keys. We've seen this in many, many different incidents before, where you would imagine there's some abstraction layer sitting between the mobile device here and the underlying database. And maybe the keys have got messed up, and what's happened is you've gone, hey, give me this, you know, the data for this cache key, and it's pulled back someone else's data. Whether it's a caching thing or something else, it definitely appears to be a coding issue. It doesn't appear to have been too dramatic in any way. As best I can tell, at least from the screen grabs I've seen, it is a name and a points balance and a status credit. So status credits like your loyalty credits. I don't know that you've been able to go through and like sit someone somewhere else in the plane, but I do know that it's exposed boarding passes from what I've heard. Now, that's a bit of a problem. Oh, yeah, shit. Here we go. So this guy is showing a boarding pass here with the QR code that he's scribbled out on. Date, seat. That's a good seat. Row 4. Sydney to Canberra. Maybe it's not a good seat. It's a short flight. Does it have... Oh, it must have the frequent flyer number in there. I've probably got a boarding pass of my own still sitting here. Is that where it puts it? Just on that part of the screen. No, all my boarding passes have expired. Yeah, I think it puts it because it's like gold, sapphire, and then he's rubbed out something just underneath that, which I think is the frequent flyer number, which isn't totally secret. I would imagine is innumerable, but yeah, you sort of want to go sharing that around. No, you're right. That wasn't a good seat. Class of trouble. Anyway, that's not the point. Right, so that's bad news. As best I can tell, Qantas seems to have gotten on top of that. I don't know whether there'll be any ongoing consequences for that. Like, did they need to, for example, cancel boarding passes? But also, boarding passes only get issued 24 hours in advance at the earliest. So, yeah, maybe that was a very time-limited problem, which has now passed, and then they can just get on with cancelling flights instead. Okay, I go. It's interesting that in many cases, people scanning their driver's licenses at the clubs are not members, and the venue will not have the contact information, email, phone number. But do they retain it? Like, if you have to scan your details, do they retain it? Because I'm not sure, if you look at the numbers, just over 1 million, would there be, keeping in mind, see how many people are in New South Wales? Oh, maybe it is. Because there's 4 million something people in Sydney. New South Wales is more than that. Maybe a million have scanned there. Yeah, don't know. Don't know. We'll find out. Mike Woodridge said boarding passes are an issue as I can then use the surname 6-character ref to go in and do anything, changing seats, cancelling flights, etc. Yeah, again, though, if we've only got boarding passes issued 24 hours before the flight, at least that is a very small window which is now already passed, assuming that they did fix this at least a day ago. All right, one more thing, because I had it on the list just before I rush off. Now, this sounded worse than what it turned out to be, but it's just kind of a funny story. Matt Johansson has tweeted here, "I just got a DM that Bandcamp is mass emailing people with their plain text passwords where their first names should be. This also means they're storing them in plain text. Could be encrypted, but I know what you mean. Not hashed." And he's got a screen cap here. Bandcamp Friday is back this week. I don't know what Bandcamp actually does. Well, and you know, this is a good, it's actually a good example of community notes, which has since been added since I originally shared this. Bandcamp Friday is back this week and it's their 40th. And then it says, hey, and then his password is in there and he's obfuscated part of the password. So it looks like a mail merge that's picked up the password field and put that where the person's name should have been. This looks really, really bad on the surface of it until you start to read the comments from other people who've said, someone said, this, yeah, I got the same thing. It wasn't my password, it was my username, which still doesn't look good because it should be the person's, probably the person's name. And then someone else has found out there is a path within Bandcamp where you can look people up by username. And they've managed to find that what this guy has obviously done is when he set the account up, in the username field, he has put the password. So he's like effectively now self-doxed himself. I'm sure. Is it in this tweet? In the community notes link? It looks like the user animal. It looks to be the user Animal Sciences, whose username is like 03FXW6RY9. First of all, good on you, mate. Good password. Don't put it in the username field because that makes it a bad password. So I wonder if he actually put that in the password field too and someone's gone just logged into his account. All right, so that has turned out to be a non-event, but I just think it was funny the way it came out and everyone's like, oh my God, including me. It's like this person's password is in the mail merge field. Also, oh my God, you've copied and pasted your password into the username field. Good job, mate. All right. I'm going to wrap it up on that note. There will be more stuff to talk about with this Clubs New South Wales thing and the out-of-box stuff next week because there's definitely more to play out here. Very, very early days. So it is a fascinating popcorn-eating, Niall drinking red wine kind of story. Let's see how that goes next week. Until then, I hope you found this interesting, particularly if you came here for the out-of-box stuff. I think I've got a pretty good handle on as much as the public knows at the moment. Cheers, folks. See you later.